Hi, everybody. We're beginning now with the text of esoteric astrology. The esoteric astrology adventure number one looked at the chart that we would be using for this process. It has the Sun in Aries. It has Leo on the ascendant. It has the Moon in Sagittarius. And during the first description, the first little webinar, I described some of this chart. And the spontaneity that will be required as we begin reading through the book. Taking in, as we do so, a number of different aspects of occultism. In other words, it's impossible simply to talk about astrology. This is esoteric astrology, and we have to talk about the field of the ageless wisdom in order to do so. So, let us simply begin. Chapter 1, the Zodiac and the Rays. Now what I'll do is I'll read a paragraph and then make some comments on it. I have some comments already prepared and I will elaborate upon them a little later in the book. We will simply improvise as we go and hopefully ideas will enter our minds, which will clarify the science of esoteric astrology as much as we can do so at this present time. We cannot do so entirely, and after 2025, or from 2025 and onwards, the Tibetan has said that he will be offering new material in this science, because the series of treatises that he is writing for us and for humanity in general is not complete, and the third installment is on its way. Okay, so let us simply begin. We will have question and answer sessions on another discussion forum, another webinar, after some of the initial work is completed. Okay. What I have to say first on this subject is entirely of a preliminary nature. I seek to lay the ground for a somewhat new approach, a far more esoteric approach to the science of astrology. Certain things I may say will probably be regarded by the academic and uninspired astrologer as revolutionary, as erroneous, as improbable or unprovable. As yet, however, astrology has not really proved itself to the world of thought and science, in spite of many definitely demonstrable successes. I would ask all of you, therefore, who read and study this section of a treatise on the seven rays, to bear in mind the above comments and to preserve a willingness to consider hypotheses and to make an effort to weigh a theory or suggestion and to test out conclusions over the course of a few years. Well, we've had 80 years to do this. although the book was actually not released until 1951, so more like 60 years. If you can do this, there may come to you an awakening of the intuition which will translate modern astrology into something of real moment and significance to the world. It is intuitional astrology which must eventually supersede what is today called astrology, thus bringing about a return to the knowledge of that ancient science which, related the constellations and our solar system, drew attention to the nature of the zodiac, and informed humanity as to the basic interrelations which govern and control the phenomenal and subjective worlds. So that will be enough for us to begin with. The Tibetan is offering us a new astrology, as he says, a far more esoteric approach. If it's an esoteric approach, it's going to involve the higher aspects of the human being, his soul nature on the higher mental plane, his spiritual triad, we call Atma Buddhi Manas, spiritual will, spiritual love, spiritual mind, and finally, even the monad. The Tibetan even has space in his astrology for the monad, or the spirit in man. We have to become inspired. It's not enough to have a prosaic attitude towards astrology and think we can simply learn it with our concrete minds. It requires the use of the Antikarana. It requires soul-infused practitioners. The influence of the spiritual triad is the influence of that which is transpersonal, or really even trans-individual in the life of the human being. And if we build that rainbow bridge, that bridge of light, into the higher worlds, then the influence of the spiritual triad will enter, and we can grasp the new astrology, which of course does not excuse us from learning the nuts and bolts of this newer approach. Many people believe in astrology, and some very distinguished individuals have practiced it. Sir Isaac Newton was a practitioner of astrology, a student of astrology. Johannes Kepler, a great scientist, also earned his living by practicing astrology. We are told also that Einstein had books related to this subject and to the secret doctrine on his desk. Of course, you know, people say all kinds of things about what was on Einstein's desk. But I did see an image of his handprint. Apparently, he gave his handprint to the famous palmist Chiaro. I'm not sure what the man's full name was, but he was known by the name Chiaro, C-H-I-E-R-O. And there was Einstein's free-floating headline in a print of his palm. Very interesting. So we believe in astrology, many of us. We've seen it work. But there are so many intelligent people who think that it's just bunk. It was expelled from the universities some centuries ago and has never quite made its way back in, but now it's beginning to do so. And it is our task to help the thinkers of the race accept astrology. This we must do by proven successes in interpretation, not simply the prediction of events, but its astrological, or rather psychological, application. Clarifying the psychology of individuals. If not, it will be considered simply a pseudoscience as it is today, but those days are fast ending. I would say that in another century or two, and certainly by the time 700 or 800 years has passed, and when Mercury becomes the decanate ruler of Aquarius, which it will rule for 720 years approximately, then certainly astrology will be in its proper place, this greatest and oldest of all the sciences, and it is our task to bring it to that position if we can. The DK is asking us for an empirical approach, obviously one that uses the fifth ray of concrete knowledge and science. Aquarius is coming in, and by the end of the 21st century, the Piscean influence will be completely removed. The fifth ray of Aquarius will be powerfully beginning to manifest. So we will have the computing power and the undreamt of means of verifying the astrological science. He doesn't want us to just believe. Many people believe in astrology. He wants us to know that it actually works, because we have verified it in our own lives and in the lives of others. So he calls for the statistical methods and careful experimentation and testing. You can see that DK is sounding the note of reasonableness from the very outset. We need what's called buddhi manas. It's the intuition joined to manas, and thus the mind will be inspired. There are so many variables in astrology, it's impossible to see what is relevant to any human being or any situation without the intuition being active. So we must find a way to find the salient features out of 10,000 variables or more, and only our intuition can help us zero in on what applies specifically to the individual or to the group or to the nation that is under our consideration. Intuition, it's not a vague thing at all, it's razor sharp, it's infallible, it is straight knowledge, as Master Moria calls it, straight knowledge. True reason and intuition do not contradict each other, and there are many people who think it does. We can have both operating, and that's what we need to cultivate, especially as students of esotericism. Cultivating of the intuition is extremely important. The intuition will reveal the grand design, the great archetypal patterns on the monadic and logoic planes of which astrology is an intrinsic part. So astrology will be full of error without the intuition. When we begin to study astrology, we are seeking what DK calls basic interrelations. Sometimes I think the science of relations is the greatest science of all, of which astrology and numerology and all the rest of our occult sciences are simply a part. The basic interrelations between constellations and the zodiac and our planet and so forth, it may be here suggested that constellations and the zodiac are not identical. We have the zodiac of signs, and we do have the zodiacal constellations, but the constellations are the great lives themselves, the great lords who are so powerful in every respect that they need a collection of solar gods or solar logoi to express through. Now, if you think about our great god, the solar logos, he needs only one star in a solar system to express his nature, but a lord of a constellation needs a number of solar logoi and their planets, if they have them, through which to express. The zodiac of signs is the imaginary path of the sun around the earth. It's a seeming, it's an illusion, and yet there are divisions to this zodiacal circle, and there are devic components to the 12 divisions, and these devic or angelic lesser lives are able to attract specific zodiacal constellational energy. Like there may be a band in the zodiac of 30 degrees that is particularly attuned to the constellation Aries, and the succeeding band attuned to the lord of the constellation Taurus, and so forth and so forth. So the zodiac of signs is our planet's method of receiving and adapting constellational energy to the needs of our planet. You know, so many scientific types say, well, you astrologers, you're so foolish, you don't even know that the sun is not in the sign you say it is, it's not against the starry system you say it is when you say it's in a certain sign. But we do know that, and we know that the signs and the constellations are out of phase and will become even more out of phase in the next 23,000 years. But that will not stop the particular section of the zodiac, which is attuned to that constellation, from receiving the energy of that constellation, specializing it, adapting it, and transmitting it to the Earth. So We are interested in two kinds of worlds, the phenomenal world, the subjective world. We have to bring them together. Astrology somehow, I think the further we go with it, we find that it's applicable to all dimensions of human living, and also to planetary life and solar systemic life. There is an astrology even that governs vast constellations, and even, I'm sure, an astrology of the galaxies. It's not a prosaic, physical, personal thing. It is a way of explaining to ourselves the many interrelations between all of the different entities in cosmos and their particular quality, their impact upon each other. We want to know the relations between all things. Astrology is one of the greatest means of doing so. Okay, there are three basic statements here, and maybe I wonder if I wouldn't be best to perhaps comment a little as I go, rather than read afterwards. Three basic statements. The statement is frequently made that astrology is an exact science. But that is far from correct in spite of the many mathematical computations. Astrology is based, curiously enough, upon illusion, for as you well know, the zodiac is naught but the imaginary path of the sun through the heavens, and this as it appears from the standpoint of our totally insignificant planet. Well, the exactitude within astrology is somewhat confounded by the expression of free will. There are certain energies which are definitely made available at any particular time, and their availability will be well calculated and even measured, but what a human being does with them, or what any entity who is self-conscious does with them, is not exactly predictable. And so the exactitude suffers. In other words, you would think that by having a specific energy impacting upon a specific energy configuration, such as a human being, you would get an exact result. Well, if the human being were simply a machine, that would be the case. But the human being has the element of free will, as do all self-conscious beings, and they can choose how to use or respond to astrological energies. Astrology is based upon the illusion of the zodiac, and yet there is a very real esoteric basis for this illusion. We're told that our planet is totally insignificant. Well, we're even told that our sun, our star, is insignificant. And when you look at this magnificent star, Sirius, and its system, Sirius is simply a dwarf star, and there are other stars that are hundreds of thousands of times more powerful in their radiation than Sirius is. So, the sun is not as stated in any sign of the zodiac. And of course, he has to say that. It is true. The sun may be in a particular, appear to be in a particular sign of the zodiac, but it's not in it at all. It's simply transmitting energy through a certain Davic portion of the Earth's aura. Alan Leo, in his early book, Esoteric Astrology, in 1917, developed this idea. He had some profound insights about what the signs really were, so I would recommend reading what he said about that. The sun simply appears to be so in a sign of the zodiac as it passes between our little sphere, the Earth, and the constellations at any particular time or season. And it's not really passing, of course. The Earth is revolving around the sun and gives the illusion that the sun is passing through different signs and can be found against a different constellational background at any particular time or season. So, okay, there is here then the idea that we have an illusory situation. It's not how it seems is not how it is, but how it seems actually delivers energies esoterically to the Earth, which have a specific impact, and even working with how it seems, we can learn many things about quality and timing upon our planet. So let's see if there's further that I've written here. Unfortunately, I've written quite a bit. Mathematical calculations can be made to say anything, but exactitude of knowledge is not the same as the mathematical calculations. So we tend to like astrology so much that we want to emphasize its exactitude, but so far we are exaggerating for reasons that I've said. But later, when Manus hits its peak of development in another 500 years for this particular cycle, then we will know amazing things about this science that we can only now somewhat infer, somewhat imagine. Okay, we are very geocentrically centered, and this is the reason for the illusion. When we look out into the cosmos, we seem to see the Earth as the center of everything. We have to change our Earth-centered point of view, and yet it is a great reality as well. We do have to see from an Earth-centered point of view, but we also have to see from another point of view, and this is the reason for the development of heliocentric astrology. We can't even look at the sun as the center. It's not. We have to become decentralized in our understanding during this age of Aquarius. Now, going on, DK has an interesting method, you know, and I think you're going to notice this as we talk about astrology. He uses what are called occult blinds, meaning that sometimes when he means the word sign, he says constellation, and sometimes when he means constellation, he says the word sign. And this is to veil the mysterious interrelationship between the signs and the constellations. He talks about constellations as galaxies of stars. We'll get to that later. And he talks about signs as concentrated influences. So I think you can see that they are very closely related, but they are hugely different in their scope, in their magnitude. So this is called occult blinding. Obviously, Master DK no longer has a geocentric perspective. Perhaps he has a heliocentric perspective. Actually, he knows much more about the location of our solar system, our Earth, in relation to the cosmic logos, in relation to the galactic logos, and not just objectively, but subjectively. Scientists know a lot about the relative relation, in an objective sense, the positioning in time and space, but DK knows the subjective relations. Okay, so we do have, yes, it is an illusion. The way we practice astrology is based upon an apparency rather than a true reality, but this illusion, and this is what we have to realize, is effective in terms of humanity's normal time-space reality. Of course, that our time-space reality is also an illusion, but it's the effectiveness of astrology which we have to establish. And I think any sincere student of astrology has established that for himself, but we have to go much further than we have. Okay, let's go on. In the ancient days, it was believed that the Earth was the center of the solar system and that around it revolved the Sun and all the other planets. This was the exoteric knowledge and position, though not the esoteric understanding, and, you know, for long ages within the mystery schools, the heliocentric structure of our solar system was taught. When Copernicus developed this idea, he was simply externalizing an idea which for thousands and thousands of years had been obviously understood among the initiates. Later, when further discoveries brought more light to the human mind, our planet was decentralized, and the truth was more clearly seen. Now, Aquarius is the great sign of decentralization. We're entering the age of Aquarius in a double sense, not only a 2,160-year age of Aquarius, but a much larger. I think he'll talk about that in just a moment. Our planet was decentralized, and the truth was more clearly seen. The human being has to do the same thing. Right now, we are person-centered individuals. Everything revolves around our personality. When we begin to focus in the wider unitive soul consciousness, we become decentralized from the personality, and we center ourselves in a larger consciousness of the soul, and even that will require at some point a degree of decentralization. Okay, much remains yet to be discovered, he says, and may even be as of a revolutionary, be of as revolutionary a nature. And I think that's coming soon. We are going to no longer look so heliocentrically. We're going to find other centers around which we all revolve. It's already happening. From certain astrological angles, a similar process of decentralization must take place, and the solar system must no longer be regarded as a point around which the zodiac revolves, or through which the sun passes in its great cycle of approximately 25,000 years. A 25,000-year cycle is called a great Platonic year, and that's just an approximate figure. Sometimes it's been given as 25,920, and Blavatsky had yet another figure for it. The Tibetan rounds things off, and perhaps does so very purposefully to conceal the real figures, but also he may be giving us certain important averages. Astrologers with insight may deny that this is the commonly accepted attitude. Yet, for purposes of clarity and in connection with the general public, the inference is permitted and accepted by the ignorant. So, we do not explain to every individual that we do not have a geocentric, heliocentric situation here. We act as if geocentrism is useful, and indeed, in astrology, it is useful. Upon this theory, anent the zodiac, rests very largely what we call the great illusion. And I would have you bear this in mind as you study with me the newer approaches of this greatest and oldest of all the sciences. Let me just underline that somehow. Newer approaches to this greatest and oldest of all the sciences. Astrology is a science which must be restored to its original beauty and truth before the world can gain a truer perspective and a more just and accurate appreciation of the divine plan as it is expressed at this time through the wisdom of the ages. So DK speaks of the usual and unenlightened conception of the Earth in relation to the solar system. It is, of course, by modern educated man, understood differently, but astrologers retain the geocentric system because it does work in relationship to the development not only of the personality, but of the soul. So both perspectives are simultaneously true. The geocentric approach is effective, but the heliocentric and cosmocentric will be realized as increasingly true. Let's see what else we have here. Okay. The Copernican Revolution, yes. The Earth decentralization is extremely important. Our Earth and our solar system have been marginalized within the galaxy or the island universe. Our solar system is only one of billions, and in some galaxies, solar systems like ours is only one of trillions. It's nothing special, but naturally, we all think we are special because we are most familiar with our immediate sensations related to the body and our emotional body and mind, and so it is with our planet as well. We are most familiar with it and totally unfamiliar in any true sense with other centers, even relatively close to us. In fact, we don't even really know what's going on subjectively in any of the planets, and they all have their life forms and their schools and their hierarchies and systems of evolution. We are very, very ignorant of the conditions which exist on planets and certainly on stars and constellations and so forth. We need a great deal of mental maturity and development during this very mental, intuitional age, the age of Aquarius into which we are entering. Maybe we will have another 20 lives or so during the age of Aquarius, and by that time we will certainly know a great deal more than we presently know. Mental maturity is required. Let's see here. There is another illusion. There are several illusions here of which the Tibetan is speaking. The zodiac may actually be a circle which does revolve. It's not an ordinary circle, but every entity within cosmos undergoes a type of revolution, and all of our chakras turn, and there's no reason why this chakra on top of the head should not turn as well. Now, the zodiac of constellations is this major head chakra of 12 petals in the great super constellational being we call the one about whom naught may be said, whose center may well be the Pleiades. So the idea that the zodiac may revolve in some way, the zodiac of constellations, is not totally far-fetched. But certainly the zodiac is not revolving around our sun as a center. If it is revolving, the Pleiades would be a more likely center of revolution, but even there are problems with distances of stars and so forth, which I don't think we should get into at this point. Suffice it to say, all chakras do revolve, and the zodiac of constellations is a chakra. Okay. Let's move on just a little bit. I think I can send some of these notes to you. I don't think I will read them all with complete specificity because I think it would be a little bit tedious to do so. I've been pretty meticulous about this, but I don't see the reason in these discussions to get into it quite so fully. A few more points here about appearances and illusions. It would be hopelessly difficult to try to explain planetary motions and perspectives to the average individual. We need, one has to go to school for that, really. So the general public is not aware of these things. They are aware of astrology's impact upon them, and they want to live a more intelligent and more fulfilled life. That is what they care about, and not about all of the geometry and astronomy. So we don't bring all of that into our normal discussions. Therefore, the illusion is allowed to persist for the sake of an illusory clarity, as I've said. Now, the term the Great Illusion, it has many different meanings. From the largest type of perspective, the Great Illusion is really the universe itself. It is the great Maya, called the Maha Maya, and compared with ultimate reality, the entire phantasmagoria of all we experience is actually an illusion of the consciousness. In other words, it is not lasting, it is not real, it is evanescent, it is passing only one profound reality is changeless, and that is not the great illusion. So when DK is talking about the great illusion, he's dealing with a relatively local great illusion. And I would say the general principle here is that such an illusion is based upon what we might call false centrism. In other words, imagining that something is the center of everything when it's not. And of course, this has to do also with egocentrism and all of the illusions that it produces in the world of human relations. It has long been established that Earth is not the center of space, as the medieval consciousness thought it was. It's been established the Sun is not the center of our of the cosmos. It may be the center of the solar system, but not of the cosmos. It's by no means the center of our perceived space, and not even our own galaxy, that vast aggregation of maybe 200 and, well, at least 100 billion stars, and maybe more. The estimates keep going up all the time, that not even our galaxy is the center of the cosmos, but is peripheral. So what really is the center? Well, for that we have to enter the world of being. The point at the heart of the world of being is the center of all things. So we are slowly, during the Aquarian Age, which is impending, becoming decentralized and more humble as a result, because we realize that we simply are not as important as we thought we were when we thought we were the center of everything. The big question in astrology: how can illusory movements, movements which seem to exist but really do not exist, how can these illusory movements, which only present themselves to our consciousness but would not present themselves to an exteriorized greater consciousness, how can these apparent movements coincide with actual changes in the availability of subtle astrological and rheological energies? Because they do. According to these illusory movements, you know, the movement of the sun along the zodiac and the movement of the planets in relation to the different signs and so forth, they do correspond with the availability of astrological and rheological energy. So the point is, apparent motions coincide with actual impacts. This is simply the way it is, and maybe for all self-centered beings it is that way. And it's very hard not to be self-centered. Even if you have the consciousness of the entire galaxy, our entire galaxy, a decentralization of kind would be needed. So there's no way that we can possibly lift the great illusion from our eyes or from the eyes of even greater beings than ourselves, for they too are immersed in the illusion. But gradually the illusion can thin, and it will come about through what I would call a general decentralization, or the ability to transport the consciousness beyond its apparent ring pass knot. Sometimes we say, okay, we are the skin-encapsulated ego, and, you know, this is what I am. But when I can begin to exteriorize my consciousness and feel that I am as present there as I am here, then already I've expanded beyond the limitation of egocentricity, and I begin to appreciate group consciousness. And I can continue that process until it becomes possible to center the consciousness at any point within the enveloping sphere. One day the solar system, one day our local constellation, one day the super constellation, which is the body of expression of the great one about whom naught may be said, one day even the galaxy and beyond. So we've got to get out of our own skin, in a way. And that's very important. Exercises in decentralization have a lot to do with lifting the illusion. We learn that if we are ever to understand the divine plan as it really is, now, you know, the word plan and planet are quite related. If we really want to know the plan, we have to know what the planets are doing. If we are ever to understand the divine plan as it is, it will require a restoration of astrology to its original beauty and truth, which has long been lost. The veil has dropped over the astrological science of the initiates and is only now being lifted little by little, and people such as ourselves and strong practitioners of this art are slowly lifting the veil which has been dropped over the truth of planetary and constellational, stellar and constellational relationships. So this should be then an adequate incentive for the study of this greatest and oldest of all the sciences. Now, you know, this is preliminary material. It's the big picture. All of this, the specifics in which we are perhaps interested in, will be found later in the book, but we have to get the larger picture here. Astrology is the greatest and oldest of the sciences. It's not yet an exact science, but there's great exactitude to it. If we were truly initiates, it is based upon a seeming, an illusion, an apparency, and yet this seeming, this illusion, this apparency actually correlates with the actual availability of subtle astrological and rheological energies. Okay, so that's the first statement. Let's go back here for just a moment, if I can find my way back here, and look at this first statement. Well, it's a long statement, that astrology is based upon, it's not exact, and it's based upon illusion, and there are many things that astrologers say which scientists cannot possibly accept, because in terms of concrete knowledge, they are very exact, and astrologers, for the sake of simplicity, allow certain illusions to persist, because it's too complicated to explain it to the public mind. But if a very good astrologer were to get together with a very good scientist, they would each realize that the other is perceiving the truth, and certainly it would be so that the scientist would realize that the astrologers are not as scientifically ignorant as the newspaper horoscopes seem to make them. Okay, the second statement. Yes, we have time. We're going to do these in approximately 1 hour segments to make them somewhat digestible, and this will be a lot of recording. The second statement, which I would make, is that astrology is essentially the purest presentation of occult truth in the world at this time. Because it is the science which deals with those conditioning and governing energies and forces which play through and upon the whole field of space and all that is found within that field. When this fact is grasped, and the sources of these energies are better comprehended, and the nature of the field of space is correctly understood, we shall see a far wider and at the same time a more closely related horizon. The relationships between individual, planetary, systemic, and cosmic entities will be grasped, and that is the great psychology, and we shall then begin to live scientifically. It is this scientific living which is the immediate purpose of astrology to bring about. Well, we are a long, long way from scientific living at this time. Let us go over some of these ideas. That esoteric astrology is the, what did he say, the purest presentation of occult truth in the world at this time. You would wonder, why is it not found in a treatise on cosmic fire? But then there is so much in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire, which is basically astrological or cosmological. So he certainly got his study of astrology going in Cosmic Fire. Really, they are inseparable treatises. If you can't really study one without the other, and as if to confirm this, D.K. has taken the most important Cosmic Fire astrological statements and put it in the back in the appendix of Esoteric Astrology. So they are two books necessary to understand each other if there is to be a depth of understanding, and we could certainly study them our entire life and just scratch the surface. Occultism is essentially a language of energy. We even have a course in the Moria Federation, and this course has been around a long time, originating, I think, in New Zealand and Australia, called the Language of Energy. So when we wish to study occult truth, we have to study energies rather than words per se. The occult truth, it deals with the nature, level, and frequency of vibrations. All energies can be quantified, and I think as well all qualities can be quantified. I've sometimes said that quantity is quality. Well, if you think, let's say, that there's a certain quality to the note C, and that note will not be sounded unless there are 200, let us say, 256 cycles per second. Or let us say that there is a certain quality to the note A. That quality is produced by 440 vibrations or cycles per second. So the quantity is right behind the quality, and without the specific quantity, you do not have the quality you recognize. The astrological energies are conditioning, and they are governing. And there is a difference between that which conditions and that which governs. A condition is an influence, and governing is a kind of a force of will. The energies which condition us, they affect and influence the type and quality of relationships in any field of space. They affect and influence, but they do not necessarily determine that type and quality. But other energies may be more influential. Energies which govern determine the type of and quality of relationships in any field of space, and they dominate that upon which they impact. So we want to think about the difference between governing and conditioning energies. Well, what are the sources of the astrological energies? They are the various planets, including the Earth. There are planetoids, asteroids, suns, systems of suns, constellations, galaxies, etc. There are magnetic fields within the Earth's aura, which are also sources of energies, and which are representative of the astrological signs, and these have been called sometimes the signs themselves. Okay, DK talks about the field of space. Well, in The Secret Doctrine, we begin with a very powerful statement that space is an entity, that the entire field of space is one great being, and I like to call that being the universal logos. But perhaps the concept goes even farther than that idea, that the absolute itself is, in a way, space. Not the kind of space that has things in it, but space as one being, one all-inclusive being, which is the ground of all being. So, do we yet understand the nature of the field of space? I don't think so. But we can understand somewhat its more local meaning. We can understand that it is a great container, as it were, and it is caused by the consciousness of the universal logos. To be is to be perceived, and no space would exist unless it were perceived. Space is really the field of consciousness of the universal logos. Okay, and in a more local sense, all the different dimensions and vibratory domains are included within this great field of space. There's a great metaphysical mystery behind what space is, and DK hints at it. If the horizon we see is to be, in DK's words, far wider and at the same time more closely related, then we are going to understand many energy cycles within our local cosmos system. And that local cosmos system is the realm of the one about whom naught may be said. I call him, it, a super-constellational logos. So we shall understand these vast energy cycles within our local cosmos system, and we shall understand the interrelationships of all lives within that sphere of embodiment. Right now, we haven't even located those lives, yet alone understand their relationships. We're just beginning to understand our solar system in any subjective sense, and as far as the subjectivity of other stellar beings out there and planetary beings, well, we understand a small part of it, something of the quality of the zodiacal constellations, and something of the quality of some of the other constellations which have made themselves known in mythology and legend. Master Moria says that if something is a legend, it is true. So we know that everything is related to everything else and reciprocally, but we don't yet know the lines of relationship, and we are learning, we will be learning to know them. This will become increasingly possible. We will know the relationship between all of these entities, and there will be far fewer what I call plan deviant actions, because we will know the plan and what is intended, and we shall be impressed by its grandeur and its beauty. We will be far less likely to rebel against that which a greater consciousness than ours has conceived. Of course, eventually we will discover that that greater consciousness is our consciousness, and it is, our consciousness is its as well. There will be no difference. So this will lead to scientific living, and this will be the purpose of astrology. Scientific living will be done when we know our purpose, we know our objective, and we know what forces have to be wielded in order to achieve that objective. We will know individual and group purpose, we will know the right use of energy, how that purpose may be manifested in time and space, and how to manifest group purpose as well. Right now, we apply energies ignorantly. We don't know what energies we actually are wielding. We don't know their intensity. We don't know how they should be applied. We are not the governors of the energies which have been laid at our disposal. We need to understand the magical process, which is extremely purposeful. This scientific living, this magical process, can be applied to the science of release from form. Now, that's what we're actually trying to do. Not that we don't want to use form and improve it, but we don't want our consciousness to be imprisoned by form, by the trammels of form. So, esoteric astrology can reveal the preferred mode of the release from form for any type of consciousness, and the best timing to exercise those energies which will facilitate release. We certainly don't want to study astrology just so we can satisfy our desire body and fulfill our lower nature by knowing how to manipulate the energies. We don't want to do that. We want to find out who we really are. We want to understand what is the purpose of that which we really are, and what is the still greater purpose of that in which we live and move and have our being. And there are many spheres of that in which we live and move and have our being. In one way, we live and move and have our being with the within the planetary logos. From another perspective, it is the solar logos, and on and on and on, greater and greater wholes, until we discovered that the entire universe is that in which we live and move and have our being. So we will know what is intended. It will be done better with the right energies and forces applied at the right time to facilitate the achievement of that intent. Okay, let us see now. Occasionally I have to stop. We just have a few minutes left for this hour-long section, and I admit it has been a bit on the abstract side. Later on, I won't have my own prepared notes to work from, which may, in a way, be a release. But at the moment, I'm doing both. So let us realize, let us read just a little bit more about this. At present, the position of the average believer in astrology is that he is an individual of importance, at least to himself, that he is living on that important planet, the Earth, important to humanity, and that through astrology he can discover his destiny and know what he ought to do. Well, that's not bad. You know, these are not unreasonable beliefs. Yes, from the larger perspective, the average believer and our planet is a speck in the cosmos. Even our solar system is said to be as a crystal to still greater beings in cosmos. Maybe that type of being is a galactic logos. But, you know, we do need to take ourselves in hand, and we do need to develop our own potentials. And as we perfect this mechanism, we will become ever more conscious of the next ring pass knot and the next and so forth. And so we can cooperate intelligently, scientifically, in the manifestation of the divine plan. So it is possible through astrology to learn what one can do, yes, and perhaps what one ought to do, of course. For a disciple, this has to take place not just for the individual, but within the group context, and for what the spiritual group, for the spiritual group to which the individual belongs is of greater importance than the individual, and we have been told this repeatedly. So, in this case, DK is not talking about the few astrologers who possess real esoteric knowledge. We can hope that number is increasing. We can hope to number ourselves among them eventually. He even said that when he started writing esoteric astrology, there were, as you see here, no initiate astrologers working on the physical plane at this time. Okay, that will be needed in order to cast the horoscope of humanity. So this is a very humbling thought for some people. That was back in 1934 or so, when A Treatise on White Magic was being written. Esoteric Astrology was published in 1951, but parts were written in the 1930s. So those two books were not separated by many years, and let us just say there are not many initiate astrologers working on the physical plane at this time. Maybe, who knows, are there any? But DK told us frankly, we have much to learn before initiate astrology is possible. Well, I think, friends, that this is where we will call our first session of reading the text to a close, and please review what we've talked about here, and we will begin, we will go on and continue with the text. It will take us a while to get through this introduction. So many blessings to everybody. We will continue where we left off with our third segment. Okay? One Om. We'll see you next time.